It's the Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy Show, making healthy living fun for everyone.
I want to congratulate you on the show. It's really great.
Well, thank you. It's great to hear.
And I actually have your book, You Can't Lose Weight Alone. I love it.
You guys are excellent. I check you guys out every week.
I love your show. And every week I learn something new, so I think it's great.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Join Dr. Fitness.
No, it's no longer a six-pack. No, it's the eight-pack and the 12-pack.
And the Fat Guy.
Or what I have, the pony keg.
They deliver the skinny. On Getting Skinny.
Doctor, full house here today, buddy.
Lee, we got a full boat today here in Atlanta, Georgia.
I know, so that makes...
We don't usually get a lot of people in the studio.
People don't like to visit us.
They just like to call in, you know,
from a distance.
We don't get really a lot of folks in here, but we're really excited to have the people we got in the studio.
Yeah.
We have two of the people from... we have Warren Bruno and Tony Myers from Race Across America from the Georgia Chain Gang. They're doing the Race Across America.
Yeah.
And they're riding across the entire country.
Right.
Now, I don't know why they have to stop there. I don't know why they just don't hop on a plane and go around the globe. It seems kind of like...
Quitters.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything, but
I think it's
United
great
States is one thing, but, you know, you got to do Germany...
Africa
and Central America, the Amazon. And so we'll be talking to them in a little bit. And also we have the lovely Jennifer Hall. She is a choreographer. She has... Lee, what's the name of the show that she was on TV, the Fox show?
So
Jennifer, what is it?
Why don't you ask her? She's sitting right next to you.
So you think you can dance?
I definitely can't dance for sure. I know that for sure. But, and that's why you're here, Jennifer. I don't know if you knew this. There's an ulterior motive. This is about teaching Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy how to dance. Did you know that?
I didn't know.
Well, yes.
We're going to see how good you are. Stars are one thing. Working with, I know that you've toured around with Beyonce, Jay-Z.
But they already knew how to dance, probably.
What about Springsteen? You ever tour with that guy?
I can't say that I have.
Okay.
How's his dancing?
I'm sure
good.
That it's great.
That dance in the dark, that white man move, I liked it. That's how it kept guys dancing around. That
she trained
one step, two
Conan
step thing.
On his string dance. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Is that true?
That's not true.
Okay.
It's breaking news.
Well, she is a fantastic dancer. She's worked with some of the best in the business, and we're going to be talking to her. She's also local here, Lee. She travels around the world, but she makes Atlanta her home.
Indeed.
So wow.
That's really exciting. But now let's get to the really important stuff, Lee. We have with us Hope Hughes. She is with us. And first of all, she was our winner of our Facebook contest. She was our 300th person that signed up to be our friend. And because of that, we rewarded her with tons of gifts. Right, Lee? We gave her lots of gifts, lots of CDs, lots of DVDs, lots of books. What'd you give her? Did you give her any candy?
I gave her all that stuff that was under my desk. You know all that stuff that you said, wow, that's a lot of stuff.
That
under
was
there.
All this crap I'm we like, got here. We got to get rid of this stuff.
Why don't we give it to the 300th person who comes on our website? And if she's local, it's even better because then I don't have to ship it.
Yeah, that's really nice. And the beautiful thing is we got a chance to actually meet Hope in at the Alive Fitness Expo here in Atlanta.
That's right.
A couple weeks back.
She said allegedly she heard of us before.
Yeah, I know, which was unbelievable. When we hear, like when we were in Omaha, isn't that funny? A guy came up and goes, oh my God, Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy.
Right, he was like crying.
We're like, you know who we are?
Right.
I mean, I guess we should act like
of course
more.
They know who we are.
I actually acted like that. You were like, wow, this guy was so, he didn't even, he knew
I
who
was
we
touched.
Were.
He was like, he drove across the country.
Right, he drove.
Not in his bike.
just
he actually
to see
drove
us.
In a car.
Right, just to see us. And that was really impressive, so I'm really excited about that. So, Hope, thanks for being here in the studio. And she's going to be actually helping us out, right, Lee?
Yes, and we're going to let her come on the air when we have less people.
Yeah, we
Sorry,
have a full boat today.
Yes.
We can get Hope on.
We ran out
time.
Of microphones.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's also a fitness buff, too. She likes, she's...
you can tell by how she looks and her tattoos.
I can.
She must be a fitness person.
If she has tattoos?
Do fat people have tattoos?
No, fat people don't have any tattoos. They won't let you. If you walk into a tattoo parlor and you're fat, they say you got to lose a little bit of weight.
Some
that.
Tattoo place.
I noticed there's another profession I noticed that has a lot of tattoos.
Basketball.
Basketball players. Those guys have a lot to say.
Yeah.
Because that's what a tattoo says to me. You got a lot. There's a lot on your mind that you just can't get out when you meet someone. You want them to know a little bit more. And I was watching last night. Boston was playing Orlando. I was so entranced watching the tattoos when they were shooting free throws.
Right.
Because I was like, what happened to that guy? I wonder what that meant. There was one guy that had around his neck, like his throat, and nowhere else, just his throat. That's pretty.
That's
hardcore.
Intense, yeah.
All right, Lee, let's bring on our first guest today. I'm excited to talk to Lenore Skenazy. I hope I got that right.
My God, you did.
Did I get that right? It was a chance.
You did. I think you're the first.
I'm the first guy?
First guy in a couple of these, a few decades that I've been on the earth, yes.
Now, Lenore, you have a book that's called...
Well, first set up the story. Remember, we heard about Lenore like
a year. I didn't hear about it. You heard about it. Well, we both heard about it.
Yes, we heard about her because she did something so outrageous, so unheard of in today's world.
I know.
True.
Which is really, and that's why I want to know if you're married or have a sister or anyone else, because to come up with the idea of you put your kid on a subway, right, and said, go explore the city. Was that what happened?
Basically, something like that. He'd been asking my husband and me if we would please let him take a subway ride by himself, and that made us start to think, well, I don't know, let's think about it. You know, he knows we're on the subway all the time. We're here in New York City. That's the way we get around. We don't have cars or horses or carts. We have the subway.
Right.
And really slow buses.
Right.
And we thought, gee, he knows how to read a subway map. He speaks the language. We see that it's safe because we ride it every day.
Right.
We're not just judging it by a John Travolta movie or Will Smith or whatever.
Right.
So we let him. I mean, you know, we made sure he knew where he was going and everything, and then I did let him take a subway ride, and he was 9 at the time, and I wrote a little article about it because I'm a columnist. And, all hell broke loose. I was on, like, 4 television shows by the 2 days later trying to defend the idea that I didn't throw him into the depths of hell saying, what the heck, I have another kid back at home, you know, if this one doesn't ever show up again, which people thought. I mean, people really, you know, were, like, saying, why would you let him, you know, go and be murdered when? It's like, you know, if I thought that he was going to go and be murdered, that I wouldn't have done it because I actually love my son and want to see him again. But at some point, we have to realize that we are treating kids at age 9, 10, 11 as if they're 2, 3, and 4, and we've forgotten what they're capable of. And we're also extremely scared about the outside world more than the generation that had, you know, World War II going on, more than our parents who sent us outside when times were actually more dangerous.
So
that's my whole point.
So,
can I just mention the book? Because you were about to mention
the
book, whoever it was interrupted.
It's the fat guy. The fat guy can't shut his mouth.
I haven't said a word. Look, Lenore's been talking nonstop. Don't get off my back.
All right. Now, so here's the book. The book is called Free Range Kids.
Like free range chickens. Like that's where it came from, right? That's
where the whole idea came from. Because, we finally realized it's not really fair to keep the chickens in the cage where they can't even flap their wings. That's not fair.
That's the lesson we learned from the farmers.
Right.
Well, I think and whoever else. Anyways, the point, and I still eat chicken, so it's not like I've become like this person who really
you've stopped
cares
eating
about
children.
The face of chickens.
Right.
they're tasty, but I started feeling bad. So, so it's Free Range Kids, and that's also the name of the blog. That's it. Done plugging. Let's go.
No.
When this happened, people accused you of child abuse. Isn't that right?
They did, yeah. They said she's crazy, she's horrible. And, I can be cavalier now because it happened 2 years ago, and I've grown a really thick skin. But at the time, I couldn't believe that people would think that I was literally, that I didn't care about my child's welfare at all.
Right.
I mean, that was the implication that, you know, the minute you let your child do anything on their own, it must mean that you're a terrible parent, negligent, maybe on drugs. And so that's why I started the website that weekend to explain that I love safety. You know, my kids laugh at anybody thinking that I'm you know, not a worried parent because I believe in car seats, seat belts, helmets when they ride their bikes. My son turned 10, the same subway rider. When he turned 10, we gave him a football party, and the one present that I gave everybody in the goodie bag was a protective mouth guard. So the idea that, like, oh, I don't care if they can come back without their teeth or they can come back without their heads, doesn't matter to me, is
not
so
true.
Wrong.
Not that wasn't you. And also to be a mother and to have that, you know, have that being portrayed,
it
must have been overwhelming.
It was so weird because at first I felt like, oh my God, all this attention, and it was sort of exciting, you know. I mean, like just being, you know, on the Today Show and Fox and this and that. And then when people would start calling in and saying, you know, like, I can't believe this woman. Then I, like, stopped being able to sleep, and I told my husband, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep defending myself because I keep getting the same image in my mind that these people were saying, you know, like, oh, my God, what if something does happen? And it shook me up. And then gradually I realized, wait, no, if we give in to this hysteria, this literally is hysteria. I know people think I'm hysterical, but when you look at the facts, and it sounds even cruel to look at facts instead of just knee-jerk being scared.
Right.
But our parents were not crazy, irresponsible jerks when they sent us out and said it's good to go outside and play.
Now, what's happened? What do you think has happened, Lenora?
Oh, that was my whole book. I mean, I actually am an American Studies major from way back. So I looked into, like, how come we are so scared now? Here's my favorite example, okay? If you get this two-DVD set called Sesame Street Old School, it's like highlights of Sesame Street from the first 5 years, which is the early 70s, when a lot of parents were growing up. You see the old-fashioned childhood. You see, you know, kids climbing on monkey bars. You see them playing in a vacant lot. You see them, you know, playing follow the leader, and the leader is not, you know, a certified follow the leader coach with, you know, 4 years in grad school.
Right.
And before you watch any of that, this warning comes on at the beginning of the DVD that says, for adult viewing only.
don't get any ideas, kids. This is crazy stuff
exactly
here.
It. Don't get the idea that you could possibly have fun outside like we're showing you. This is totally unacceptable now. Yeah. And the reason it's unacceptable or has become considered unacceptable, I find it very acceptable, is, you know, I break it down, but there's two main things, I think. One is that my parents weren't raising me in the kind of media oversaturated society that we have now, that you have all these cable stations, you know, fighting it out against each other, and so they'll go to, you know, they'll spend what it takes to go to Portugal to follow the story of an abducted four-year-old. They'll spend what it takes to go to Aruba. Why do they spend money on that? Because it's worth it to them. It's so rare that they have to go where that story is.
Right, and they have to fill time, and like you'll get that you'll get that, you know, you'll have a breaking story where they'll take you somewhere, like Fox will take you, like Alert, and they'll take you like to Utah, like where they'll show that a child's been abducted somewhere, and they're obviously trying
or not abducted, or they'll get it wrong, or you know, or it turned out that they were wrong. You never hear the wrong. Anyways, the point is that crimes are horrible and they make me shake. But they are so rare that if they were happening every day, all the time, the way it feels like it is, we would just have it on, every bit would be on the local news. But they have to go far away to get these stories, and they repeat them and they repeat them. And here in New York, it was just the 31st anniversary of Eitan Patz. Which is a horrible story. How do we all know the name of one child from 31 years ago? This is a horrible story, but it's keeping, you know, there've been 31 years since we haven't had a comparable story, so we keep repeating that. And you ask people, would you ever send your child to the bus stop? They say, oh no, don't you remember what happened at Eitan Patz?
Right.
It's like, would you ever get in a car? It's like, oh no, 31 years ago there was that pile up on the Long Island Expressway.
Right.
You know, you don't
drive. Don't get on the car. There was an accident. Yeah. Now, don't you think there's a consequence to this as well with the kids?
Of course. Well, you guys are on what sounds like a health show.
Yes.
You know, and the consequence I think we're all pretty aware of. I mean, I was thinking this weekend I declared last Saturday was take our children to the park and leave them their day, and I was suggesting that people take their kids age 7 or 8 or up and let them play outside and try to figure out something to do other than watching their computers for half an hour with each other without us telling them what to do. And I said on my blog, I said, you know, if anything happens pretty much anywhere in the country to a child today, it will be blamed on me because I was the crazy person. I really thought that. And you know, if you want a diet, try the anxiety for 3 days diet of waiting for take your children to the park day and having the, you know, the media attention on you. Anyways, the point being that they could point to me because I said this crazy thing, go outside and play. But that very Saturday, you're probably aware of this too, another 769 children would be diagnosed with diabetes. Because every day, 769 children are diagnosed with diabetes, which is twice the number from 10 years ago. And who are you going to point to for that? You know, you're going to point to a mother who said, I'm going to keep you in, it's just too terrible outside? No, because, first of all, there's millions of them. And secondly, it's hard to get upset about something that's not on the news.
So now, this is another question this raises. Now, do you think this is an issue about mothers? Or do you think this is an issue about dads too? Because it is dads too.
Well,
the overwhelming amount, like in my family, I fall into the same category. My wife, my kids need they need permission to walk outside the house. You know,
they need the mail.
We need the alarm has to be set. 14. Everyone's almost in college. No,
14, 12, and 8. And, mm-hmm. you know, this is a constant argument about letting the teaching the kids to let the, you know, to go outside and explore and do things. And you would think I am the craziest human being on planet Earth. And Lee and I just we wrote a book about we actually just wrote a book, How to Raise Active Kids. And one of the things that we talk about is how important it was for us and our experiences when we were kids growing up mm-hmm. And exploring and going out. And that today kids are losing that ability to do that. They're not going out. So they're not exploring. They're not doing anything.
No, they're not exploring. And you know, one of the reasons I wanted to set a day, like a, literally a day and a time, I had said 10 a.m. last Saturday, is because one of the reasons they don't go outside and play is because your kids are not outside and playing.
Right.
So when my kids look outside...
there's no one to play with.
There's no one to play with, so my kids stay inside, so your kids stay inside. So I said, if we get everybody out at 10 in the morning, they'll meet each other. You know, it's quite possible that my... you know, your 10-year-old and my 12-year-old would hit it off,
right.
and they would both love to, you know, play jump rope or whatever.
Right.
But if they never meet each other, that won't happen.
Yeah, and it's...
So you have to get kids out, and the consequences of kids staying inside have been documented. It's not just the diabetes. It's depression. It's, you know, for my kids who I really have a hard time plying away from the computer, I have to admit, they don't even particularly, they're not really good at playing. You know, they haven't had the same thing where we would come home after school and go outside and amuse ourselves and then come in and eat and then maybe go outside again till the streetlights came on. And sometimes we'd be bored, but a lot of times we'd come up with a game or kickball or Barbies or whatever it was. And this is something that kids aren't doing. And it turns out that play is not only important for your whole body, but it's important for your brain, too, because when you're playing with other kids, not your mother, you know, letting you have another, you know, four strikes and you're out, and not the coach deciding the teams and where's the goalpost and everything like that, but you and your friends deciding, excuse me, you know, what are the rules and was that in or out and it's my turn. No, wait your turn.
Right.
All that stuff.
They have to learn that stuff. They have to learn how to deal with that stuff
right,
on
from
the
their,
playground.
From their peers.
They don't.
Right.
Right, they don't. If you're playing with a computer and you're losing, I've watched my own kids do that. They get bored, they turn it off. It's like, this is no
That's
fun.
It.
It's
Game's
like,
over.
Imagine playing with your friends and saying, this is no fun, I'm losing, goodbye. Would you play again? You know,
right. And they have to, and kids need to learn that, like, if they pick on somebody on the field, and little Johnny beats him up, that's a good lesson. They need to know that if you're going to pick on someone, pick on a smaller person. Don't
right.
pick on the
that's
bigger
person. Important lessons.
Well,
you know,
they
you
do
need
have
to, learn,
to
that.
Learn how to deal with the real world. It's so strange. A lot of people, when I was talking about, okay, free range kids says Saturday is take our kids to the park day. People wrote to me and said, what if they're, you know, what if they're with other children? You know, what if there's an argument and I'm not there? And it's like, that's
right.
Good.
They'll figure it out.
Right. That's important.
Right,
they
right, right.
And then
they said, what if they're thirsty? And it's like, they could carry water. And the big thing is, what if they're hungry? It's like, isn't that part of the problem now?
Right.
That they're right
it's
next
not
to
lack
the refrigerator?
Of food. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we think you're doing this. This is such an important topic, and we think that the fact that you wrote this book, Free Range Kids, is such a great concept. And the website is freerangekids.com. Is that correct? That's your blog?
You're right. And, you know, the book just gives little – I mean, like, I'm not saying that everybody has to send their kids.
Yes, you,
you
are.
Know?
Absolutely.
No,
every kid needs
to
be outside.
To the subway.
Yes, I think you should. And the thing is – the interesting thing about you is – You actually travel in New York City. Most people would think, oh, my God, that's the most dangerous place on Earth. And you're like, look, we do this every day. We've checked this out. We know what's safe, what's not. And this is an important mm-hmm. life lesson to teach your children. So I commend
right, but
you for
it, you
that.
Know, but if it was an important life lesson in Baghdad, I would feel differently. I mean, the
right.
point is that actually in New York, 2009 was the lowest murder rate on record here. So it's not like, you know, I know it's dangerous, but we got to learn how to deal with it. I don't like danger. And I have a feeling that most people – live in neighborhoods that they chose because they wanted to raise their kids there. And that's what I'm suggesting. Get the kids out into the neighborhood that you chose for them.
Now, is it true, Lenore, we also heard that you're taking the kids skydiving next weekend. Is that any truth to that rumor, or is that making that up?
You forget that I'm actually a chicken.
Okay.
I could never do that. No. Actually, if I was a chicken, I guess I could skydive.
Well,
I'm a fearful mom, put it that way.
Well, the name of the book is Free Range Kids. Where can people get it?
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at your local bookstore. Just get it.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Where can Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy get it? We haven't gotten one. We got to get one, Lee.
We have to buy one.
It's
also very funny. I mean, like, people read it and laugh out loud. So,
all right. Well, I can't wait to read it. It sounds good.
Well,
thank you so much for coming on the show,
well,
Lenore.
Thank you. This was a wonderful interview. Usually people are meaner, so thank you
so
much.
No, we think you're doing great stuff. We think it's a great concept,
and
I think
next time we'll be meaner.
No, we won't. Lenore, have a great
have a wilder idea.
Have a great day. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye, guys.
That is Lenore Scanese. She's the author of Free Range Kids. Go to her website, freerangekids.com, and also check out her book, Free Range Kids. And also, when you're online, check out Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy at drfitnessandthefatguy.com. Check out our book, You Can't Lose Weight Alone, the Partner Power Weight Loss Program, and our soon-to-be-released book, 35 Ways to Raise an Active Kid. I think that's the name of the title.
35-ish. 35.
It used to be 37. They chopped two of off because I think two of them sucked, and they said 35 Ways to Raise an Active Kid. That will be released soon. Turner Publishing, check it out online, and make sure you check out all of our past great interviews with Jillian Michaels, Denise Austin, Jack LaLanne, who else? Rocco Desperto we just had on, Devin Alexander, who else? Anybody else you can think of?
No.
All right, the hell with everybody else. And let's bring on our next guest. We have with us Dr. Stephen Bilo. He is the author of Pigskin Dreams, The People, Places, and Events That Forge the Character of the NFL's Greatest Players. This is a new book that's a great book. There are 22 people that lived Hall of Fame lives in this book from the NFL. And Dr. Bilo, he actually interviewed a lot of these guys like Franco Harris, Bart Starr, Larry Zonka, some of your favorites. You know, you're
just Larry Zonka, everybody else. I don't care.
You're
about.
Not a big fan of everybody else. Well, anyways, he's with us today. And the thing I really liked about the book is that there's great stories about – and they're all focused around activity, about how all these great athletes were mentored by great people to forge them to have Hall of Fame lives. So, Dr. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Now, how did you get involved with this, and how did you come up with the concept of going around to NFL great players and interviewing them?
Yeah, well, the co-author and I, Todd Kalis, he was an 8-year veteran of the NFL, and we have worked on lots of different projects together, and so we spent lots of time together, and we often talked about our own athletic experiences and how important athletics was in our development and becoming the people that we became, and we just posed the question to one another really one day and said, hey, we ought to interview some of these guys about their young lives and their influences and see what kinds of things helped them achieve the levels of success that they did.
Now, what stuck out in your mind? What was the one thing that came to you when you were listening to some of these stories? Was there anything that was there was a common thread throughout all the players?
Yeah, when you start talking about, you know, greatness, not just on the field, but, you know, on and off the field, and success and happiness in life, three key things really popped out. And I was listening earlier on the phone when you're with your previous guest, and, you know, you were talking about the importance of, you know, the kids going out and doing things and being active. But the three things we found was the importance of a maternal influence in these kids. You know, you have to be loved and you have to be nurtured, and that creates a foundation for you to go on and really complete different matrices of your life, if you will. And
right.
The second thing we found was the importance of play, just like your previous guest, I think, was talking about. You know, it's just so critical for a kid to have the opportunity to go out into the world, you know, even as an infant, you know. And when I talk about play, I'm not just necessarily talking about playing dodgeball or this and that. I'm talking really about, you know, all the activities that a kid does to explore his universe, to explore his world, so he can develop a view about that world. And what really is the nail that drives it home is the importance of a difference maker in their life. All these guys, these great football players, these legends, had examples, wonderful examples of difference makers in their lives. You know, I'll give you a quick example. Howie Long.
You're right. Right.
You know,
Howie Long was an interesting
grew
story.
Up in the tough side of Boston and really didn't have a very good early life. Got passed around from relative to relative. Well, he moved to a suburb area when he was 14 years old, going into the ninth grade. Howie never participated in any kind of organized sports. And so the coach at his new school sees him walking down the hall, and he goes, you know, Howie had some size to him. So he goes, you know, hello, son, do you play football? And Howie turns around and goes, yeah, I play.
Right,
you
know, and he had no idea.
Truth of the matter was, Howie didn't even know how to put the equipment
right.
on. But Howie goes on to talk about how that one moment in his life changed the entire direction of his life. So mentors are just hugely important in our lives and in living successful and happy lives.
Yeah, you don't know. Like, it's funny because you mentioned that story about Howie Long. You don't know the impact. I mean, if Howie Long, if you talked to him and say, would you realize that that was going to be the, you know, a turning point in your life at that moment, walking down your high school corridor and some guy
walking up to you, would you have said that was going to be the defining moment of your life? And it happened to, you know, the guy happened to have such an impact on his life. Now, also in your book, there were talk about players like Franco Harris. It's funny that even I noticed a lot of the people that you picked were legends years ago. And when you go around talking about this to mentoring kids and stuff, do they actually know some of the names of these guys? Are they like, who the heck was that guy? You know, like when they say, like, Franco Harris, who's Franco Harris?
You know, we do get the opportunity to go speak to kids, and there is some name recognition. You know, people like Steve Young, Mike Ditka, who they see a lot on TV now, and even Dick Butkus, who you don't see so much of. But, you know, they do have some name recognition, but not with a lot of them. And that's, you know, that just has to do with the times that we all grew up in.
Right, yeah. And in terms of some of the guys that that you have in the book, you know, like Larry Zonka, some of these people, you talked about the importance of play and how important it was, like, to be in the neighborhood and how the kids would organize and get together and play. But guys like Larry Zonka, he grew up, like, on a farm. Like, he didn't – like, it was miles away from anybody.
Yeah, there were several guys like that. Mel Blunt's another good example of that. But they all had pretty big families and tight families, so I think that kind of was a substitute, you know, for the interactions they might have on the playground. And a lot of these guys were involved in athletics at an early age, so they did that, get that kind of exposure. But you're exactly right. You know, the playground thing, and it may be within a family environment or in the neighborhood environment, you know, just that interaction is so critical and so important.
Now, you also talk about a lot of these guys not only were Hall of Famers in terms of in the NFL, but they lived Hall of Fame lives, and there were there's a saying that you have in there called "Think, Say, Do, and Be."
Right.
Tell me what that represents and what that means.
Well, you know, in going through and you know, editing all the interviews and writing the book and this and that, you know, there was a point, and I don't remember exactly when it was, but we came up with that a little mnemonic device, really, kind of what it is. You know, think, say, do, be. The thoughts you think become the words that you say. The words that you say become the actions that you'll take. Those actions become your habits, and those habits will create your character. And that character, ultimately revealed, becomes the destiny that your life will be. And you can, you know, we talked more to these guys about their younger lives, and you can just see the things and the events and the people that had influences on these guys that caused them to think a certain way, you know, that caused them to understand that, you know, if I make this choice to work harder than this other guy, there's a really good chance that I'm going to have success here. And not just physically, but, you know, emotionally and mentally too. You know, I know a number of these guys, and they're just wonderful people. And I'll use Mel Blunt again, the great defensive back from Pittsburgh Steelers back in the 70s. You know, Mel has two youth homes where he helps disadvantaged kids. As a matter of fact, one of them's in Valdosta, Georgia.
Oh,
and
nice. Lee, we're going to send you down there.
That'd be good.
Valdosta.
I need
you like
help.
This. You like that.
Now, when you're doing this, do you find that the kids lack the self-discipline, or they lack the person that kind of stays on them to make sure that they do what they promise to do?
You know what? That's an interesting question, and I'll turn that around a little bit. Because we're talking to these kids, I mean, we're using the think, say, do, be thing. We're talking to them about choices and things that you wouldn't think. I mean, we talk to them from sixth grade, you know, on through high school. And one of the remarkable things that happens is the educators, the principals, and the coaches come up to us, and they're just blown away. I remember the first thing we did back in Minneapolis, Minnesota a few months ago. The principal came up to us, and he was just all wide-eyed, and he was going, "That's incredible." He said, and we're talking for 45 minutes in front of these kids, and you've got a group of 400 kids in an auditorium, and none of them are poking each other or making noise or anything like that. You've got their attention. And so the point I want to make is I think that these kids are hungry for that kind of thing, that they want to hear that, oh, they do have some degree of power. Not some degree, they have total power in how their lives are going to unfold through the choices and the actions that they choose to make in their lives. So that it's just incredible to be in front of those kids. And I've been speaking around the country for years, but not to young groups. But this has been the most fulfilling thing I think I've ever done in my life, to see the look on those kids. And when those kids come up to you, from a disadvantaged kid to a kid that you know comes from a great family, and they're all telling you the same thing, you know, thanks for coming. We got an email the other day from a kid, you know, what you guys had to say really changed the way I think about things in my life now. So, you know, it's pretty fulfilling and pretty rewarding.
Right. We really take for granted a lot of that. You know, when a kid goes off to school, goes into high school, or they're involved in athletics, people think of the coach as just a guy who's, you know, supporting their skill. You know, the guy that's, you know, taking them and seeing how and develop a skill. And really, it has to transcend more than that, you know, because the most important thing is how many kids are actually going to turn out to be professional athletes or play even in college. It's more important that they develop them in terms of being good kids.
Right. I agree with you 100%.
And they have that opportunity.
Yeah. I think that most coaches, you know, at the high school level and even earlier than that, I think that their greatest reward in their life is to have an impact on those kids. I know me. I sent my high school basketball coach, who had a tremendous impact on me in my life and is responsible for a lot of success I've had in my life. He was one of the first guys I sent a copy of the book to. And, you know, it's just like, you know, thanks for what you did.
For what you did. Right. And that's got to be the ultimate thank you to a coach is to have, you know, having been acknowledged in a book that, you know, you wrote to him. Now, how come, I want to know, you have the Pigskin Dreams book. Are you coming out with the book about the guys that you don't want to be like? Like, you know, we interviewed, these are the guys that didn't make the cut. We had about 20 or so guys that...
20? I think there'd
be a lot more than that in the NFL. I don't know. But is that going to come out too? Because I think it's a good contrast.
Well, that's interesting, and we haven't really thought about that, but we wanted to stay on the high side of things. But we may consider that, yeah.
Now,
that's a good idea.
Do you have
I'll tell people that was my idea.
Do you have any tips for the parents? Because a lot of the parents are part of the problem in that they are almost kind of living through their kids and trying to push them into places they don't want to be. Do you have any tips for parents in dealing with an athletic child?
Yeah, we've actually got a top 10 list, Lee, and it's free and available on our website at pigskindreams.com. I won't go over the whole thing, but, you know, some of the highlights, just what you mentioned, you know, to live vicariously through your kids is not really a good idea. Your kids are them, and you are you, and you are not your kids. You know, one of the top number one thing in that top 10 list is to let your kids have fun, especially when they're younger than like 12 years old. Competition's all well and good, and we all need to, you know, be competitive in our life to move forward and to win at our jobs and our activities and those kinds of things. But, you know, let the kids have fun. Another one is, you know, talk to your kids, not at your kids. And don't make your kids play a game. Let them choose to play something. Sure, you should be supportive and give them information about a sport that they might not know anything about, but don't push them into something. You know, I saw the worst thing a few years ago, little kids playing soccer. I guess the little girl was 6 years old, and she comes off the field at a break, and her parents are there, and they just harangue her and chastise her for not being a professional soccer player. And the little girl, the poor little thing, you could see the life just draining out of her, and it broke her heart and little tears coming down her eye. You know, as a parent, don't do that. Be supportive of your kids. Don't push them into doing stuff they don't want to do. And let them have fun, especially when they're early. And even these guys, the pros, you know, a lot of these guys said they played pro ball and they had fun in it when they weren't having fun anymore, even though it was a lot of work. When they weren't having fun anymore, that's when they quit.
Right. Right. And, you know, a lot of those pro players also, one of their biggest fears that they have too, especially when you interviewed Howie Long, was about how his fear about his kids being on the athletic field and the pressure that there's going to be. It's going to be a totally different world for him because every kid, you know, every time he steps on a field, they know that it's Howie Long's son and they expect him to play like Howie Long, which is a lot to ask for. So,
yeah, those are unfair expectations.
Exactly.
That some people have.
Well, the name of the book is Pigskin Dreams, NFL's Greatest Players. Great stories, and it's a great read, and it's a fascinating read. It's very, very interesting. I love reading the book as well. Where can we find the book, Dr. Stephen?
It should be in all major stores now at Amazon. You can get a copy at our website, or we will redirect you to Amazon. You can get it cheaper on Amazon than you can buy it from us. So
yeah, but if you buy it from you, don't you get like an autograph, and you can charge another $20 probably for it if you get like your autograph. Todd's autograph too.
There is an autographed option, and I think they charge $4 extra.
That I would do that. That's nice. Well, anyways, you can also go to pigskindreams.com and get it there as well. thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really appreciate it, and we'd love to do a follow-up to the next book. I won't say that the, you know, the idea that it was mine. You can take it. And how not to live a Hall of Fame life. You know, like, yeah, what are the things to do?
That would definitely be an interesting book.
Okay. Dr. Stephen Bielow, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Okay, thanks, guys. Great being with you.
Have a great day.
You too.
That is Pick Screen Dreams, the people, places, and events that forge the character of the NFL's greatest players. Check it out, Lee. You need to read the forwards by your buddy.
I wouldn't know because you didn't give me a copy of the book.
I did.
No, you didn't?
Yeah, I did. You chose not to read it.
It's probably Hope has it.
Yeah, Hope, that's what happens, Hope. He likes to send stuff over to me. Anyway, when you're online, check out also Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy at drfitnessandthefatguy.com. Check out our blog. Check out our past shows. Check out our books that are on there as well. And go to our Facebook page and become one of our friends.
And you could be a big winner, too.
That's right. Hope will tell you about that. Okay, well, I want to bring on our next guest. She is in the studios with us today. She is a dancer extraordinaire. She is a choreographer.
Very nice.
Jennifer Hall, she is an international presenter for Nike, Power Systems, Body Bar. She does it all. She's traveled all around the world, United States, Canada, Japan, choreographing. She's also been on tour with Beyonce and Jay-Z. Who else?
Usher,
that's right. Those are all pretty good dancers.
They're very fabulous dancers, indeed.
They all know how to dance. Now, when you do all that stuff, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
When you're dancing with them, do you go, no.
Usher, back it up. Back it up.
Lift, drop your shoulder. You look
too much. That is the choreographer's job. So generally speaking, I'm in the background just hoping that the guy who's lifting me doesn't drop me.
So now do you have to actually plan all the steps and everything?
Oh, yes. Everything is rehearsed and choreographed, including the blocking, like where you're supposed to be on the stage.
Right, where you move to.
Indeed. So if you get in the artist's way, you're in big trouble.
They don't like that. No. They don't like to share the light.
Well, it's the choreographer that gets mad usually.
Yeah, and that's a pretty intense field, right? Everybody, when you're a dancer, it's not like you're hiding in the back. Everybody wants to be up in the front, right?
Indeed, and you're wearing very few articles of clothing,
right?
So yeah,
you want to be noticed.
Perfect.
Do you have any good wardrobe malfunction stories?
I can't say that I do. I've seen a few wardrobe malfunctions. Usually they're in rehearsal, though, which is always a very good thing. You try to dance in your outfit a few times. I will say one particular performance with Beyonce, we were painted silver.
Right.
And just painted? You were like, we're not wearing clothes?
No, we had clothes on.
Oh okay. No, because I know they do that. They body paint people, like in photo shoots. And
my friend, another friend I have named Jennifer, said what we were wearing was underwear. So does that help you? So we were painted silver, and it was a partner dance. So as you start to sweat, the silver starts getting really slick, so it's really hard for the guy to hold on to you. So that was very interesting in terms of wardrobe.
Wow. In terms of dancing, especially with, like, when you walk into a room and you're there with Beyonce and you know, like, how popular they are across, you know, across the world, how do you start that relationship off? Like, how do you start it and say, like, okay, you got to listen.
Hey, Beyonce.
You got to listen to me.
It's me, Jennifer.
Actually, she is very good at making you feel comfortable in the situation. And additionally, you always, well, at least I, always feel extremely humble. So I'm basically communicating with the choreographer. And then if it becomes a time that I can talk to the artist, that's fine. But someone like Beyonce, she makes you feel like you're part of the family. So not every artist does that. I'm not going to badmouth anyone. But
come
she's,
on.
No,
you got to
no,
badmouth
no,
somebody.
I shan't.
We do. Dr. Fitness the Fat Guy, we talked
about. Who did we have last week?
Last week?
Let's badmouth somebody.
Oh, Travis Stork, the guy that was supposed to come on our show.
On
the doctor's show?
I'll badmouth him. How about that?
See that.
Okay. But we'll talk. If he comes back on, we'll talk about it.
Now, and some of these stars, do they say don't talk to them? Don't even look at them because they don't like to be looked at?
There have been situations where I've gone to do a performance and they're like, we need your cell phones and your cameras and don't ask for an autograph and don't try to take a picture and da-da-da-da-da.
It sounds
like a job.
It's usually
crazy.
When there's a celebration going on, like it's you're dancing for an artist's mother birthday or something like that. It's usually where there are other celebrities involved, but it's still kind of annoying because you're like, well, I didn't want their autograph anyway.
Right. I don't care about it.
But you know, the real reason that I came on was to tell you what we've decided to do with dance was...
That might be the real reason, but we have our own agenda here.
We're going to tell you what our reason was.
Well, okay.
Tell us what your reason is.
Beyonce, that's
No. We want to tell us what your... Because we got to talk about the dance lessons for Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy.
Okay.
That's the real reason, right?
Well, you should know up front, I used to weigh 192 pounds. No way. I'm 5'4". I am indeed 5'4".
That's not true.
It's true, I swear.
What, you had like triplets?
What happened?
No, I didn't have triplets. It was actually after I had my child and should have definitely lost the weight by that point. But
were
I
you
kept
a good, better dancer? Were you a better dancer at that size?
I cannot say that I was.
No.
Actually, dancing is how I lost all my weight. So
you never were athletic, and then all of a sudden you gained 200 pounds, and now all of a sudden you're super
dancing
fit?
Beyonce?
I was a dancer from the time I was born because my mom was a dancer. So I'd
professional? Was she like a professional?
She was, but she was a ballerina, so a totally different arena.
Genre.
Right?
How'd she feel about you weighing two bills?
She was not happy with me, I'll say that much. I basically quit dancing completely and started working behind a desk and eating whatever I wanted. So that's how I got up to 192 pounds.
Yeah.
So I started dancing again in anticipation of the Beyonce audition. Just to see, you know, I think I told you Jamie King, who you guys all
know.
He called me and said, you know, you need to audition. And I looked at the mirror and went, Yeah. So the way that I lost all my weight was dancing. And obviously it was easy for me to dance because I already knew how.
Right.
And it's an amazing cardio interval workout because you go way up in your heart rate, way down, way up, way down.
Right.
Anaerobic, you know, not too scientific, but you get what I'm saying.
But how did you, how long did it take you to lose the weight?
It took me 4 months. But again, I knew I had an audition date. So I don't think I could do that again in four months unless there was major pressure. And I didn't do anything crazy. I didn't do drugs or starve myself or any of that. I just danced like a maniac and cut out all the crap. That's the best way I can.
Right. So that's a good moral of the story. If you want to lose weight,
have an audition for
Beyonce or somebody famous, and you lose the
weight.
Well,
that's what happened with us and the photo shoot for the magazine.
That's right.
Hey,
absolutely.
Same thing.
Or you guys could just decide to star in a workout DVD. That's the same concept.
That's what we've heard from other people.
Yeah, I will tell you that firsthand, yes.
Now, you've also created something called Flirty Girl Fitness.
Well, Flirty Girl Fitness was actually created by Krista and Carrie Nee.
They're not here. Yeah, we really don't care about them.
I don't want to get in trouble. People don't seem to understand.
Okay. I know you were the real brains behind it.
Right.
We'll give them
It was the big tweaks. Your input was instrumental.
Well, thanks. Yes, I am the ultimate flirty girl. That's what they call me because I'm a flirty girl master trainer, which means I create the instructors for flirty girl. And everyone who teaches flirty girl, very few of them are actually dancers.
So what is flirty girl?
It is a fitness program that was created by women for women. Okay, it's cardio dance class.
And you're like flirt with God. Like it's like flirting
it's
with God.
It's very flirty.
It's a pickup thing? Like at bars you do this?
It's a certain eye. It's like a wink.
A wink?
You do it in the gym. So it's not exactly.
You pick up guys at the
unless
gym?
Your bar is a gym or
that's
your
right.
gym is a bar. I guess that could work. You are taking a class that all the moves are derived from videos or movies. For example, we have a move called the Pulp Fiction.
The Pulp Fiction from the.
Yeah, that dancing. We, yeah,
with the eyes.
Yeah, mm-hmm, right.
You got
the John Travolta thing.
Oh, I thought it was the adrenaline in the chest. I thought that was the.
That'll be the next round. We'll do that next year on the DVD.
Lee has personal experience with that device.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Back I'm also
day,
a doctor.
He grew up in Miami in the 80s, if you know what I mean.
I do. And some of the other moves we have are called the Beyonce. We have the Britney. I mean, they're very based on...
But they're not named after them, because then you'd have to pay them, right?
If they only have the first name and not the last name included, you're okay.
Right.
But we found out the hard way that you can't use the name Playboy Bunny. They made us take that out. Yeah, right. So now that's
what
just called
the
Bunny.
Yeah,
it's called the Bunny. You got it. At any rate, it's really fun... is really fun workout. You don't even realize that you're working out. And again, the person who co-created all the choreography with me, her name is Mindy Milray, and she's a very famous person in the fitness industry, but she's not a dancer. So the litmus test was if Mindy can do the move and look good doing it, then it made the program. And so right now we're trying to train tons of instructors all across the country. And again, some of these people have been group fitness instructors before. Some of them are literally like Joe Blow off the street, but they like to dance. They've never had any kind of training in fitness or dance. And our next training is actually this coming Sunday at the Concourse Athletic Club.
Right. And that's you also teach classes here in Atlanta, Georgia at the Concourse Athletic Club. Actually, where the fat guy works out. Did you
that's
know
it?
That?
I did not know
that. He works
it's
out
true.
There.
Are you sure you go there?
He does.
I don't go there. I'm a member.
Oh, I see.
Let's be clear.
Two I was separate thinking, things. On Tuesday, I teach like four classes. I've never seen you there.
Not much. Not so much.
I think that's a good start for you.
What?
Booty Beats.
Yeah, you should come to Booty Beats.
Yeah, that group exercise is not going to happen.
See, what is that thing with men and group exercise?
It has nothing to do with men. It's me. I don't like people. So you're lucky you're all in this room with me, actually.
Right. I have to balance him out because I like people. He doesn't. So I balance everything out. Now, also, you were also a choreographer on the show, so you can on the Fox television show, So You Think You Can Dance.
I choreographed the audition segments when So You Think You Can Dance first came out. So I used to go to Vegas and make these poor children, I call them children, do horrible leaping and turning segments. And it would be like the first cuts before they actually got on the show. So I really drove the poor kids into the
ground. Are you still doing that? Because that show's starting now, right? Or the week or so?
If they would pay me. Oh. You know, there's something about money that just motivates.
You're motivated by money. Yeah.
Right. So Florida Girl Fitness actually pays me.
Right.
Not to mention I believe in the program. So it's really hard for me to look at 100 really talented dancers and know only like 10 of them are going to get on the show. So it really hurt my little heart to have to beat them up to that degree. So I kind of stepped
show
away.
Biz.
Right.
Yeah, it is. And I don't like it.
You
it's
don't like
yucky.
That part?
No, just give me normal people.
Now, Jennifer, how do you stay fit other than the dancing that you're doing? I mean,
she
obviously, I'm teaching the classes.
Exercise
but
classes a
are there
day.
Other things that you, not a day?
Well, on Thursday, or on Tuesday, I teach 4 classes in a row, but that's not a normal gig for me. I do everything under the sun. My husband and I actually run a company. It's called Need More Fitness. We have a fit camp that we do outside, and it's interval training, it's running, it's biking, it's push-ups, it's plank work, it's everything you can possibly imagine.
Like a boot camp.
We don't call it boot camp because we don't yell at you, call you a maggot, and tell you you're an idiot if you can't run. You know, I mean, we meet you where
you are. What if we want to pay extra for that? Would you be up for that?
If you pay extra, we can think about that.
All right, that's
it's actually it's donations only based, so we try to reach out to people in the community that couldn't otherwise afford fitness, and then most of the money goes to earthquake relief in Haiti because we're kind of on a mission to help.
Nice. What happened to your motivation and money?
Oh, that's huh? nice.
All of a sudden now you're Miss Generous.
It's giving back.
I got to make extra money from Florida Girl so that I can give it to Haiti. See,
wow,
you know,
are you Haitian?
Balance it. Can you tell? If, I know you guys can't see me, but I glow in the dark.
I don't want to profile here. You know, you might be Haitian.
Red hair and blue eyes and freckles. I'm definitely Haitian.
Parts of Haiti that some neighborhoods are rough.
Wow,
with the red-haired people.
Now you've got quite a schedule. Now you're also you teach with the classes over here at the Concourse Athletic Club, and then you also travel back and forth across the country each week too.
I do. So almost every weekend I'm in a different city. As a matter of fact, last weekend when I went somewhere, I was in security at Hartsfield, and they said, yes. Where are you going today? And I really blanked out. I'm like, I don't know. Please don't interview me. I don't know. What does it say? So the next place that I'm going will actually be Sugarland, Texas, which is near Houston, and that's June the 5th. And between now and October, I have 17 flirtifications all in different cities.
Flirtifications.
That's what it's called. Isn't that cool?
I love that. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
And how do you become flirtified?
The way that you become flirtified is you visit flirtification.com and you register. You come to a 6-hour workshop and you get all kinds of support materials so that when you go home, it's not like you had to cram that 6 hours in and remember it. You can go watch DVDs and listen to music and things like that to help you along the way.
Right.
And I also wrote this fabulous manual. It's called the Flirtification Manual.
Wow.
You get
nice.
To take that
We're really
media.
Ringing that out, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, yeah, we are. We like all the flirtification words, yeah. And
do you do any bar mitzvah dance teaching, you know, to teach guys like how to dance when they go to a bar mitzvah?
No one's ever asked me for a bar mitzvah, but I have done things like for bachelorette parties or weddings or things along those
not
lines.
Not bar mitzvahs yet.
No,
no. There's
those.
A big market in Alpharetta.
Especially in Haiti.
It's huge right now. Very big. Very big.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And
are you going to get certified, doctor?
Flirtified.
Flirtified, whatever.
I'm getting a dance lesson with Jennifer is what I'm getting. Hopefully, someday. Yeah.
I'll
someday.
Tell you, and don't sue us for this, but we actually don't flirtify guys because it's
what?
Flirty girl
yeah,
fitness.
Yeah, girl.
What kind
yeah.
of sexist organization is it?
I know. Shocking, isn't it?
I'm offended by that.
Maybe you can become the first guy.
Well, I was going to tell you.
What
some
about
of the,
transgender?
Some of the guys in San Francisco told me there's a whole market we're missing. Seriously, they did tell me that. I was at California Mania. They're like, what's going on here?
Well, we really appreciate you coming on and telling us all about that. And we won't mention about Usher. Well, should we mention that story about Usher?
No.
We'll
talk about Usher.
The diva? Devo? What do you call a guy that's...
You got me.
Devo for a guy that's...
Well, that's what you were saying, how Usher was a snob to you?
I didn't say any of that.
He's
trying to get me in trouble.
Fat guy's making up stories.
Okay,
that's not true. Anyway, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the show today. The website is flirtification.com. That's where you can go, and that's where you can go, and we can take classes all
and
over the country.
Go to concourseclub.com.
And you can see her...
Get some private group
Concourse
lessons.
Concourse Athletic Club.
Concourseclub.com.
Is it Concourse Club?
Maybe.
There's
a
little
athletic club.
All right. Well, anyway, go somewhere where Jennifer
Google
is.
Google Concourse Athletic Club.
Yes. And check her out at flirtification.com as well. And we really appreciate coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
When you're checking out Jennifer Hall at Flirty Girl Fitness, also check out Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy at drfitnessandthefatguy.com. Check out our past interviews with celebrities like Devin Alexander. She is the cook for The Biggest Loser, Right, Lee?
Is that what she is?
Yeah.
She wrote the cookbook.
Well, she's also, I think she made the food. She's been on the show.
And we had Jillian Michaels, who was the trainer.
Yeah, we're soon going to have Bob Harper on the
show.
Bob
Harper.
He's coming on.
Get the whole crew.
We get the whole crew out here pretty soon. And I really want them coming on making us food, though. I had enough talking about working out.
Talking about food.
I want food. I want them to bring in food and start cooking for us and stuff like that. I want Rocco DiSpirito to come here and make some pizza for us, for God's sake.
That'd be good.
That'd be really good. But check us out online at drfinsthefatguy.com and go on Facebook. Check out our Twitter. Check out Fat Guy, right? Is that where your Twitter thing is?
At Fat Guy.
And I'm DrFitness6. Six because
there were five other ones that beat him to the punch on Twitter.
When I signed up for Twitter. But become one of our friends on Facebook. Okay, I want to bring on our next guest. I am excited to have in the studio two guys from the Georgia Chain Gang. Now, you may be thinking, Georgia Chain Gang.
Yes, they were just recently released from
prison. Cool Hand Luke, with that movie with Paul Newman and George Kennedy. You remember that? Do you remember that movie?
Of course.
The classic movie. But
how many eggs did he eat?
I don't remember.
I bet they know.
I don't remember. But we have with us Tony Myers and we have with us Warren Bruno. They are two guys of the team, and we're excited to have them in the studio. If you don't know, they are part of the Georgia Chain Gang, and they are riding across the United States, the entire country, in under 7 days.
That's what they're shooting for.
That's what they're shooting for. And this is a competition. You guys win money when you do this?
No money.
No cash prize?
No money for this?
Not at all. Just the experience, the glory of doing it.
Just the glory.
And raising money, too.
We're raising money.
And raising money. Now, Warren, you have an interesting story. You are a cancer survivor.
I am.
And you are part of this team. You're not actually riding in this.
No, I'm the crew chief.
You're the crew chief.
You're the most important guy.
Right,
now,
I think so.
Now, you're also a restaurateur. Are you doing any cooking for these guys?
I'm not the cook. No, I was the one that recruited the team and training the team and parsing out the job.
So you're really the brains.
You're really the muscle behind the whole thing, too.
So now what goes into planning out this whole event? Because, first of all, there's four riders, right?
Four riders. The big part is the support crew is 11 people.
And there's
we're going 24 hours a day.
You have some hot chiropractor chick in there, don't you? Some girl I saw, some picture. We've got
two chiropractors.
Both female?
One male, one female. I had to convince the guys that a male chiropractor is okay.
That's what I would think.
Or massage therapist. Right. I'm sorry. I said, take a blindfold and some perfume. Maybe.
So now, the ride is across... how many miles does that cover? Was that 3,000 miles?
First of all, we're very sensitive. It is a race.
I know. Why do you
across
keep
America.
Making it seem
not
like
a
ride? You're making it seem
not
like
a ride.
Fun
it's a
run.
Race.
Look, because to me, a ride is the same as a race. Ooh. If you're riding, you can't ride. You got to race somebody, right?
Why are you starting trouble?
I'm very competitive. I'm very competitive. When you're riding with somebody, you're racing them. They may not know it.
A lot of times it ends up that way, yes. And
right, okay. So it's the race across America. How many miles, Tony? And you're the trainer who's trained everybody.
Right.
Now,
right.
Do you ride with everybody on the team? Does like Warren get on the bike with you?
No, Warren doesn't. But the other riders on the team.
What the hell's wrong with Warren? Why is he not on the bike?
We've tried.
Did you crash a couple of times? That would happen?
You know, Can't you get him a tandem? Get him a tandem bike and then strap him on the back.
I've got a tandem.
It's good to follow him from 3 feet back. You kind of get an idea what they're doing.
Get in the car.
Look good up that hill.
That's right.
Doing good.
No, but I'm actually a cycling coach and own a coaching training company and hatched this idea a couple of years ago to do this race and to use it as a launching pad to raise money for leukemia lymphoma. And I had already worked a lot with a number of team and training people and team and training coaches. So that was the direction I wanted to move, and I thought this could be really big, really gather a lot of attention, and plus I'd get to ride across America. Although I've got to tell you, when you're racing and when you're doing this, a lot of what you see is gray and sparkly.
You don't see a lot of
behind. You're not taking in the sights.
You're not like, look at the mountain. You're not going like this, pointing with your hands, going, look at that, so pretty. You're not doing that.
Let's stop here. This is a
right.
interesting
spot. So you're
going
to say you're going to race across America, but you're not really seeing across America. You're really focused like a laser beam.
That's right.
Now, tell me about the course. I'm really concerned about you riding with cars. I'm concerned about for your health.
What makes that work so well is you have a follow vehicle, pace vehicle behind you. And you do race 24 hours a day, and the lights of that vehicle are really your lights as a rider.
So you're going 24 hours straight.
Yes.
So it's like, is one person going, then another person going, or you're all
it's
doing
tag team?
It's tag team. It's like a relay. There's four of us, and the way you want to divide the ride up is as varied as the teams themselves are. Everybody has a different idea how to do it. We have two shifts. We have two guys that are the day shift and two guys that are the night shift.
How'd you come up with that plan?
We found
because some people don't go to sleep well at night. Is that
no?
What it was?
And some people don't like
the sun, the heat.
Don't like the sun and the heat. But more importantly, what really happens is some people don't like to ride at night.
Right.
And
they're afraid.
They're afraid. I mean, it's just the,
scary.
Because you can't see. It's
scary.
You lose your
perimeter. I find that you can see better. I'm on the night crew, and you're very focused because between the light and the fact there's nothing else in your visual field, I enjoy it.
What are you, a special ops guy? Navy SEAL in your past life? Is that what that's about?
There's no wind at night. That's the other part.
No.
That's
you don't like the wind.
But we did decide how we were going to divide things up. And so what you do, basically, I'm on the night crew, so I come on late afternoon with my other night crew teammate. And then every hour or two, we swap back and forth. And this is kind of predetermined when we're going to make the swap. And that continues. And basically, you're on the bike for an hour or two going as fast as you can go. And that's how you make it across the country in seven days.
It's a sprint.
So this is this is just all, you know, I don't want to say the word, but to the wall. It's the whole time? There's no, like, lollygagging?
No.
And there's no Peloton either. This isn't like the Tour de France where you can stream with a bunch of people.
It's
all you.
The vehicle cannot get in front of him. You've got to be behind him the whole time.
Now, when you recruit four guys for this thing, what do you call up Lance Armstrong and say, Lance, give me some of the slackers that didn't make the team? How do you get the guys for this thing?
Well, actually, I had one guy in mind to begin with. And he said yes, and he had a friend that he suggested. And
mostly people with no jobs like a week, or they have a lot of flexibility.
There's a lot of flexibility.
A lot of flexibility in their jobs, I got you.
This is a lot of training involved. Right now we're riding about 400 or 500 miles a week.
Right, that's a lot.
It is. Like and
100 miles, you have to do those 100-mile days?
You got to do back-to-back-to-back mileage. And when we're not outside, we're usually training inside in what are very training focused spin classes. And
right.
So you just got to do it. You just got to do it.
Do you do any sort of planning or any sort of training on if you're going to fall, like how to prepare for a fall? And, you know,
or do you just don't think about it?
Or you don't think about it? Because I know bikers, and everyone say I stopped biking because of this one fact. Everybody told me you're going to fall.
Yeah, it's not if, it's when.
It's when. And I said to myself, I don't want that to happen.
Right.
And I'm no matter what I want, it doesn't matter what I want, it's going to happen. I'm like, then I don't want
to. Right. So he refused to take the training wheels off.
Well, there's a couple of angles to that. First of all, we're all pretty much lifetime cyclists. We do this as a passion to begin with.
Right.
All of us have gone down. All of us have gone down and suffered.
Some harder than others.
Some harder than others. As a coach, I've got to tell you, I've been down a number of times. But so there's that aspect, and you do learn how very early on. The other thing, and I want to sort of segue into this, one of the things that kept me going and it kind of gets you past the fear of what you're doing is thinking about what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Right.
And the fact that you're supporting a cause, leukemia, lymphoma, those people, you know, I was able to grow up healthy, and I'm able to do this as a healthy individual over 50 at this point. And there are so many that are denied that opportunity. So that's the driving force behind us.
Right.
And it kind of gets us by some of those fears as well.
Right. Now, tell us a little about the arrangements. Do you have like a bus, Warren?
Three vehicles. There's a follow vehicle stays with the rider the whole time, an RV that jumps ahead, and that's where the massage therapist is. And we feed, clothe, and wash, do all the day-to-day stuff.
Right.
And then there's one vehicle that just shuttles people back and forth to hotels. So people are trying to grab some sleep and then keep on rotating. So we've got 2 6-man crews that are back and support the whole time.
And they have communication devices where you can communicate with you?
There's 4 navigators, 4 drivers, 2 massage therapists, 2 mechanics, and you just keep on.
Where's the food come from?
We try to get some. We stop where we can. And
really, it's not really like you're. It's not like it's all prearranged. Like it's like
cyclist has their own. You know what they like. They're different personalities. You try to keep them pumped up and keep them going. Make the exchanges as quickly as you can because they lose minutes if you're not.
Any right. Out of the four, who's the biggest pain in the neck that needs like needs a certain?
I think Usher.
I am.
You're the most difficult.
I'm a control freak. I'll admit it. As a coach and a business owner, I'm a control freak.
Right.
I try to run the show.
There's four writers, and they're all a pain in the ass.
Right.
But we're the stars on the crew, and so everything's really good for that. And, you know, the cause is it. And on the crew this year, there's a number of people that we believe in the cause. One of the women that's with us lost her daughter to cancer. I'm a cancer survivor. I'm in treatment. So we're really passionate about what we're doing. And this year, I did it last year, a little bit dysfunctional. This year, we got people that are really focused on the mission and the raising. We've raised already $70,000.
Wow.
We're on our way to $140,000 for the cause. And that's just a big step.
That's fantastic. Yeah, very good. And it sounds like a great idea. Now, for next year, if you guys, I don't know if you're interested, but I don't know if you know this, but the Fat Guy and I have a tandem bicycle.
That's right. We're available.
We have a bike that's been built by Supersize Cycles that put a bike together. The thing can hold, what, 300,000 pounds? 1,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. This thing's like a tank. And
send us ahead to get the food. Like, we'll drive through a Taco Bell, bring it back around for you guys.
Hey, now, last year, before you get too far with this, last year there was a tandem team.
You're kidding me.
Did
see
the
this?
Whole thing.
Yeah. Tandem team.
Yes.
Maybe we can get in on that.
Now,
and, you know, the other extreme, there was
I'm
a team
die
was,
with him on the back.
Team of paraplegics that did it with their hands.
What about
with their hands?
Hands. Hand cycle all the way across the country.
What about any recumbents?
Unicycles?
No, but they did have single speeds, which, by the way,
right,
is
which
a
is
very,
really hard.
Yes. I mean, that's so. And next year we're going to have, I'm going to be behind a Wounded Warrior team, and it's going to be all guys that can ride a regular bicycle but are in some way compromised prosthetically or some way challenged.
Are you doing that with Mike Lenhart?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Now, Warren, who's in charge of the oil and the tax that throws out the tax for the
riders?
For the competitors. Who does that? And the smoke screen. Who does
the
all that
screen,
stuff?
You know, working with the other teams, we kind of block a little bit.
Yeah, a little block.
Whoops, I spilled oil again.
Gamesmanship.
Whoops.
I hate to tell you, there's a little bit of truth to that. We were racing the Brazilians to the finish line. Here you go, 31 miles across the country, and you end up in a neck-and-neck-and-neck race with another team. And they were trying to block their follow vehicle, and their guy was in front of the follow vehicle. They were trying to block us from going
around them. Listen, wow. Tony, throw a bunch of soccer balls.
Right,
they'll fly off the bikes like you can't believe with the Brazilians, especially with the World Cup coming up. Well, I know you guys are headed out in a couple of weeks, and we really appreciate you stopping by and telling us more about it. It's a great cause. And I think you guys are doing a great thing. And I want you to keep in touch with us. Let us know how you do. Maybe we can do a follow-up, have you back in after the fact.
That'd
let us know
great.
How you do.
Yeah.
Tell us, give us some stories from the road. Let us know what took place and whatever we can do to help. The website, by the way, is teamintraining.org/GA.
Right.
Is that where people can follow you?
Actually, the Georgia Chain Gang dot.
GeorgiaChainGang.org.
Yeah, GA, abbreviation for Georgia, GAChainGang.org, and that has links for donation.
And links to the Lymphoma Leukemia Society.
Yes. So.
Great. And Warren, you have a bunch of restaurants here in Atlanta. You want to give a shout out to any of
them? I do. Atkins
have?
Park Restaurant in
Atkins
the Virginia Park. Highland for 27 years. We're actually having a pub crawl this weekend to fund this, part of the funding for it. And we're going to the 5 oldest restaurants in Atlanta, which happen to be along North Highland Avenue. So,
Atkins cool
Park
that?
And Ormsby's is the other one that just opened up over 14th and Howell Mill.
Fantastic. Well, we really appreciate coming on the show today and talking with us about such a great cause. And lots of success. I know you're going to win this thing. Now that you got our blessing, you guys forget
it. Hey, winning this thing is reaching our funding goal. Seriously. That's winning it, as far as we're concerned.
Really? I don't think so.
Not you on the bike. On the bike, you're going to win this thing.
So you go, okay, Team Brazil, you can go ahead of us because we've raised enough money. Go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure. That's great. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Great. Well, that's a great show today. I want to thank all of our guests for coming on today. Lenore Scanese, check her out. Check out her new book, Free Range Kids, How to Raise Safe, Self-Reliant Children Without Going Nuts with Worry, and go to her website, freerangekids.com. I also want to thank Dr. Stephen Bielow. Check out his book, Pigskin Dreams, the people, places, and events that forge the character of the NFL's greatest players. And go to his website, pigskindreams.com. Jennifer Hall is with us as well. She is created, well, not created, but she's part of Flirty Girl Fitness. She's really the brains behind it, and you've seen a bunch of her stuff already. Go check out flirtification.com as well. And I want to thank Tony Myers and Warren Bruno from the Georgia Chain Gang for coming on. Go to georgiachaingang.org to check out their information as well. For Lee Cantor, I am Dr. Adam Schaffer. Oh, and I want to thank Hope Hughes, our 300th Facebook friend, for coming into the studio with us today. And for Lee Cantor, I'm Dr. Adam Schaffer. Lee?
Yes.
What's our tagline?
You forgot?
I did. I forgot it.
We make healthy living
fun for everyone. Have a great day. We'll see you next week.